Daydreaming About Dragons. We're hitting episode 94? This is episode 95. We're getting towards 100. With reply shows, we've already hit 100, but the numbering is going to hit 100. Three digits. That's a big deal. I got to figure out what to do. If you have ideas on what I should do, something special, something festive for the 100th episode of Daydreaming About Dragons, let me know. Drop me a line. You'll have ways to do it at the end of the show in the outro. So, consequences. I'm seeing a pattern of behavior when people, when GMs talk about consequences online. I feel like I need to say something about it. So we're going to need to talk about what consequences are, how we use them, and maybe even the word consequences. All right. So we're going to delve a little deep here. We'll see how this goes. Here we go. Consequences, hugely important. Ready? And this is kind of, consequences are kind of the one of the big jobs of a referee, GM, DM, game moderator, whatever. You know, the players do something and the world somehow responds. And the more interesting you can make that response, the better. The vibe I'm looking to get, and I don't always hit it, but I try, is I want it to be both a surprise, but I also want a nodding of like, oh, that makes sense. Based on what we did, that makes sense. But a little bit of a surprise, like, oh, that's cool. That's different. It's not what I expected, but it makes sense given the world. Huh, interesting. That's the vibe I'm usually going for. I will have a link in the show notes to my brainstorming sheet, context, cool stuff, and consequences. And you can take a look at it, see if that's something that is useful to you. And I write a bit about consequences in it, and we'll talk about that in a while. I think before we even do that, we need to talk about the word consequences and when we usually hear it, right? I feel like in American politics, when we hear about consequences, it's because someone has done something, and so they have to pay some kind of punitive price, right? These are the consequences of your actions, someone says, as they put their glasses down their nose and look over their glasses at you, judging you. You know, this isn't my fault. These are consequences. So there's a punitive vibe to consequences that I think worms its way in, as the politics of the world often do, into our gaming. And we need to disentangle it. We need to understand that it's there, and then we need to leave it behind us. Here's the deal. Consequences don't have to only be punitive and negative. When you throw a rock in the pond, the only thing that happens doesn't have to be that a frog picks up the rock and throws it back at you. That is not the only consequence. We need more interesting choices, a diversity of consequences, if you will. Here's an example. I see this example a bunch on Reddit threads and all kinds of threads all over the place. Here it goes. Ready? Dear DM advice, my players have just angered the king. They took they defecated on his carpet and called him names, and then they killed his favorite wyvern before they left the castle laughing. The king is very angry and has called his knights to kill the players. I fear that in the next game, all of the knights are going to round up and murder the players in their sleep, and I don't know what else to do without making the world seem stupid. Sincerely, Mr. Consequences. Okay, so first of all, yeah, there should be consequences. The king should absolutely be rounding up his posse to go after the players. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. That should be a thing that should be happening. There can be other things happening. What about the most powerful duke in this kingdom, who kind of hates, low-key hates the king and isn't married into the king's family yet? right? What about your like Tywin Lannister types who are like, they're powerful and they don't have the throne yet and they kind of don't like the king at all? They might find that having a group of irreverent, violent adventurers in their pocket doing their dirty work for them without any real, you know, link that anyone can find in the world. Oh man, they did that? That's terrible, my liege. That might be really useful. What I am saying is this: when the players make an enemy, they might have also just made a friend. So have the consequences happen, right? But also look towards other political situations that might be happening. Maybe they made a friend too. And that's really it. Just don't make the consequences one note. And it doesn't have to be another noble, because I mean, am I sick of nobility in my D&D games? Woof, in my D&D fantasy. I am sick of knights. I am sick of nobilities. I'm sick of crowns, sick of monarchs. Sick of it. But it's a part of it. So maybe there is, you know, maybe the king has been not such a great king. And so there is a conspiracy of common folk who will support the players and hide them. Maybe there's a Robin Hood posse that is out there robbing the king and is going to say, hey, we could use another group to run some interference while we do some highway robbery. And I mean actual literal highway robbery. It doesn't have to be one note. Consequences can come from all over the place. And think that over. Maybe there's someone who wants the throne, wants to kill the king. Maybe there's an obscure law about what you can call upon when you kill the king's wyvern. I don't know. The situation will give the context, will give you the clues, but look for consequences beyond just players do bad, me smash players. It's so punitive. It's so United States of America, you know, prison industrial system of fantasy. And we can do better. We can do much better. And we can do more interesting things. Consequences doesn't mean, oh, the players have to be taught a lesson. If you find yourself saying the players need to be taught a lesson, check yourself. Because something's wrong. Before we get to Inspiration Goat, I just want to remind you that if you would like to game with me, and pay to play is not something that bothers you or vexes you or that you can, or you know, or is going to put you out of rent. If your money situation allows for it, you can pay money and I will absolutely GM for you. Let me know. There is a link in the show notes. Check it out. It's another way to support me and support the show. So check it out and maybe we'll get to game together. It's not the only way to game with me. I would also, there are other ways. There's money-free ways, but it's one way. Please check it out. Onward. Inspiration Goat, what do you have for us this week? Wonderful choice, Inspiration Goat. I want to talk about maybe my two favorite fantasy novels that I've read in a really long time. How much did I like these novels that I will not yet name? Well, let's name them first. The first one is called The Border Keeper, and the second one is called Second Spear, both by Kirsten Hall. There will be a link to Kirsten Hall's website. And in finding this link to share with you, I found out that Kirsten Hall has a book that I have not yet read. So I am going to go get that in about 10 seconds. I'm going to go get it. I am so excited that there's a Kirsten Hall book that I haven't read. Can you hear it in my voice? Here's how much I like these books. I very seldom give 5 stars to a book unless I've read it over again. I'll give 4 stars and then I'll go back, read it again and say, okay, this is a 5-star. Or I'm going to keep it 4 stars. Or demoted to 3. I'm tough on books. I am. And both of these books I gave 5 stars just out of hand. When people say that a book is lyrical, I'm not sure what they're saying. But now I know. Because The Border Keeper and Second Spear are absolutely lyrical. I'm not going to tell you what exactly, I'm not going to like sum them up. I'll sum them up a little bit just so we can talk about what I think we should get out of them for gaming. So you don't need to have read them in order to follow along, and I will have no spoilers. They are about, you know, people in this kind of hellish, arcane afterlife that is layered. So you could talk about the layers, layer one, layer two, and each layer is presided over by either a demon or a god. And each layer has at least one rule, a hard and fast rule that plays into that god or demon's strengths. And I think those rules, these arcane rules, that's the interesting thing I want to get at. That's what I want to take with us into gaming, is how weird arcane worlds and rules can play into our gaming. Let's marinate on that a bit, shall we? What the rules are for a world is really an interesting thing. The players learning how this world works is a really interesting thing. And the fact that different parts of the world will have different rules that they have to learn, that's neat. And it might be something to consider. What NPC can I introduce to teach the players about the etiquette of this place? Or not even the etiquette, just the hard and fast rules about how things work, right? An example from my play? Sure. One way to do this, if you want the players to be kind of learning the rules as they go, and you don't want them to be what you do is you make the characters not know much about the world so that the players and the characters get to learn together, right? So don't make a character who is a Machiavellian prince if you want the player to be learning in time with the character, right? Have the character be a princeling, someone young, someone naive, someone who's been sheltered, and suddenly the world has changed, and now they're out in the world. I did this in a Burning Wheel game that I ran with my friend Alexander. He was a young apprentice wizard, and he knew nothing of the world. All he knew is he loved spicy sausages, and he could set things on fire with magical ability. And suddenly he was out in the world and dealing with very real political problems and very complicated ones. This is a good type of game. If you're the type of GM who wants to create a world away from your players, do some lonely fun and then have them learn about it through play. You know, where the players start off seeing just a bit of the iceberg at the top, and then they gradually learn more and more about how the iceberg works and what's going on under the surface. And I think there's a lot of that going on in Kirsten Hall's book. I am so excited that there's a Kirsten Hall book that I haven't read yet. I can't tell you. I am pumped. So I think there is much to be taken from these books, not only in their lyricism, but in the way the main characters, the way the protagonists learn the rules and use the rules. And I think that's a key part of playing, right? You want to inhabit these other worlds and figure out how they work and then use it. And I've got more examples. Oh, yes, I do. Here's a fun example. And this is a cool thing that I've seen happen in a lot of games. And it happens so often that I want there to be a name for it. I want a verb for this cool thing. The players had killed a lich, right? Here's the complicated situation. The players had killed a lich, and the lich was going to reform, you know, in its phylactery, near its phylactery, in a few days. And so they ran like all heck to get to the lich's, you know, fortress sanctum, so they could grab the let's not call it a phylactery, let's call it a soul jar. I like that word better. They ran back to go get the soul jar and destroy it in the you know, ritualistic way that they had to do so in order to destroy this lich forever. Okay. That's the background. That's what's happening. So I had made up a bunch, unbeknownst to the players, I had made up a bunch of factions within this lich's fortress and had made up this complicated hex flower. I'll have a link to the hex flower and to this AP, if you'd like to hear about it, and the play about like what was going on and how the different factions were dealing with the fact that this very powerful lich had died, and they knew it had died, and so word had gotten out, and the factions were kind of in disarray, right? So one of the players had been given a dagger by the flagship Death Knight in the D&D world, Lord Soth, Knight of the Black Rose. And Lord Soth basically liked this guy and said, when you die, keep this dagger near you and I'll find you. And I'll bring you into my posse. And you can be an undead knight and ride with me and my crew. So the player politely takes it and is like, oh my God, what am I going to do with this thing? Okay. Turns out the Lich had this Nazgul-like group of undead folks guarding the gates and are acting as guards within the fortress. And unbeknownst to any of the players, they were called Wormgaunts. The Wormgaunts were kind of ready to run. They wanted to kind of be out of there. They weren't doing well in the interfaction fighting, and they kind of just wanted to bounce, but they didn't quite have the reason to yet. And then in comes the D&D party, right? Everything's poised. The whole deck of the whole house of cards is blowing in the breeze, and in comes a D&D party, like a bull in a china shop. In case you need more mixed metaphors, and my buddy Drew's human fighter walks up to the head of the Wormgaunts and says, listen, this is a token of respect from Lord Soth, the Death Knight. Go find him, and I'm sure he will allow you to join him. I am his representative. That's why he gave me this dagger. And I had him roll kind of a persuasion roll, but I had him roll with advantage because it was such a good, he had this item, right? It was like, it wasn't a lie. It was a lie, but it was a lie with some truth mixed in kind of, and he had the dagger and the Wormgaunt could see that dagger is legit. And they marched away to go join Lord Soth. Now Lord Soth has a group of elite Nazgul undead warriors at his beck and call. Is that going to come back and affect the players? Absolutely it is. But in the short term, they got to walk into this fortress without having to deal with a battalion of Nazgul soldiers, right? Of Wormgaunts. So that was the players kind of making their own rules. I love that. I love when you give something to the players and then they use it in some weird, unexpected, beautiful way. That is one of my favorite things about GMing. Watching players just kick the teeth in of the setting. And that was a good one. That's my favorite one lately. My goodness, I am a representative of Lord Soth. What moxie. What beautiful moxie you have. Cool stuff. So that's what I'm thinking about when I'm thinking about Kristen Hall's books. And I'm going to run out and go get that third one. It's not in the same series. It's in a different series. But I don't care. I'm going to get it. And in the meantime, here's the outro. Could you listen to it? Thanks. Thank you for listening to Daydreaming About Dragons, episode 95. If you'd like to support the show, there are ways to do it. They all begin with R, so it's easy to remember. Reply, review, remunerate. You don't have to do all three. You don't have to do any of them, but you could do one. Here they are. First one you could do is reply. Track me down on social media and reply to the show. Tag me, email me, let me know what's going on, what's going on at your table. If you've got a thought on consequences or a cool consequence that you brought to the table, I would love to hear about it. If you've got an idea for how to incorporate the different rules of settings and how to teach those rules, to the players and the characters. I'd love to hear about it. So drop me a line. Let's make this a conversation. I don't want to be talking from a pulpit. So please reply, blog post, YouTube video, you know, modern dance. I joke, but someone's going to do it. Someone's going to get those leotards on. They're going to rock out. You can review. Go to the podcast app of your choice and review the show. Drop me 5 stars. Feed the algorithm. It's ugly blood price. And let people know what they're getting into when they hit play on an episode of Daydreaming About Dragons. If your podcast app of choice does not have a review function, head over to iTunes, if you don't mind, and do it there. Or you can go to Spotify, whichever is easiest. But I would love a review. I have 0 reviews on Spotify, and I have 20-something reviews on iTunes, and I would love many more. Or you can remunerate, hit the Anchor app, check out the show, and there are ways to send me money through the show. A little bit of money goes to me every month. A couple bucks goes a really, really, really long way towards helping me dedicate time to this that could be dedicated to other more profitable ventures. I'm not going to stop doing it. I can't stop, but letting me know that my time is worth it to you is really appreciated. So that is something else that you can do. Reply, review, remunerate. I'm pretty happy with that. If you can't tell that I'm happy with that alliteration, I'm pretty happy with finding an R word for when I found remunerate, I was pretty psyched. I hope your gaming is going well. It's winter here. It's getting cold. It's getting dark. We're buckling down and the gaming is getting good. I hope it's getting good for you, wherever you are, whatever the seasonal changes are, whatever hemisphere you're in. I'll talk to you soon.